You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Well, the day has come to an end, and so has a thrilling, thrilling match. I waited this long to bring you this story because, well, something bad has happened. India is out of the World Cup. These and other stories on this edition of Stories of the Day on the 10th of July with me, Rakesh Sharma, right here on Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Well, a billion dreams have come to an end because now India is out of the World Cup. Ravindra Jadeja, in the end, gave India somewhat hope, a glimmer of what could be a remarkable entry into the final, but that was not to be. It was a stunning top-order collapse that left the Indian team reeling. India lost its batsmen Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli and KL Rahul for just one run each as they slumped to 5-for-3, and we were actually 24-for-4 when Dinesh Karthik was out for 6. India recovered somewhat to 150-for-6 of 40 overs, and we needed a further 90 runs of the remaining 60 balls to reach the target of 240 at Old Trafford in Manchester. At the end of that very thrilling and ultimately very disappointing match for Indians, New Zealand is into the finals of the Cricket World Cup. India are out. Well, after that news about the cricket, let's get into another topic that we've been following for a while now, the Indigo dispute. Did a $20 billion deal break the partnership between Indigo founders Rahul Bhatia and Rakesh Gangwal? That's the question Prince Matthews Thomas asks us on Money Control. The first seeds of discontent between these two founders of Indigo may have been laid elsewhere, he reports, though there was a minuscule difference in the shareholding of the two founders. Bhatia's Interglobe Enterprises had a controlling right over India's largest airline. While Bhatia and his family own a little over 38% of Indigo, Gangwal and his family control a shade lower than 37%. The controlling rights gave Bhatia immense say in several matters, including the appointment of senior management. It was in fact a Money Control story which was the first to speak of the differences between the two founders, especially this particular contention. Gangwal has also alleged related party transaction violations, that is RPT violations, by Bhatia, whose Interglobe Enterprises benefited unduly. But that may not have necessarily taken the two to the point of no return. What did push the friendship to the brink was the $20 billion contract that Indigo placed in June for LEAP 1A engines with US-based CFM International. These engines will be used in the airline's future fleet of 280 Airbus 320 and 321 planes. This according to Prince Matthews Thomas on an exclusive story on Money Control. Till now, Indigo had Pratt & Whitney to supply engines for most of its fleet. But we know that off late, Pratt & Whitney engines have been giving trouble. A senior executive from the industry said, and I quote, "This was a huge change. Pratt & Whitney was supplying the engines since the start of Indigo. Of course, P&W engines had major problems with the NEOs." But why would a change in the OEM anger Gangwal? Bhatia, in his letter to the Indigo board on the 12th of June, gave a clue, responding to Gangwal's requisition for an EGM to highlight the alleged corporate governance issues. Bhatia had said, and I quote, "I have highlighted in previous correspondence that the genesis of Mr. Gangwal's angst lies elsewhere. The refusal of the IGE group to succumb to his unreasonable demands to dilute the IGE group's controlling rights," unquote. He also then added that Gangwal's ego was hurt on realizing that upon his refusal to lend his hand in the company's ongoing negotiations with OEMs, that is original equipment manufacturers, the company had proceeded to make alternate arrangements for the purpose, unquote. For more on this story, do visit the website moneycontrol.com for this story about what could have caused the rift between Bhatia and Gangwal. Online tutoring startup Byju's today said it had raised $150 million from Qatar Investment Authority, which is the sovereign wealth fund of Qatar. QIA is an investor in Airtel and real estate developer RMZ Corp and also has a small stake in Flipkart. Business Standard was the first to report this deal on the 17th of June. The transaction now values Byju's at $5.7 billion, according to sources. In a statement, the company said the round was joined by Owl Ventures, which is a Silicon Valley-based venture capital fund focused on online education companies. This is Owl Ventures' first investment in India. Byju's founder and CEO, Byju Ravindran, said in a statement, and I quote, "We are happy to have strong partners like QIA and Owl Ventures on board with us." The government has recalibrated and fixed the direct taxes collection target for this financial year at 13.35 trillion rupees, a task that the CBDT chief said is difficult but achievable. He also said that the government can only think of further lowering corporate tax rates once the exemptions and deductions in this sector are phased out. Public sector banks haven't had it easy over the course of the past 2 years, and it seems there is another problem afoot. The public sector banks, weighed down with huge NPAs, are losing their lead banking relationships with Indian corporates to their private counterparts, according to a study conducted by Greenwich Associates, which is a banking consultant group. The study pointed out, and I quote, as of 2016, 20% of large Indian corporates participating in the Greenwich Associates annual corporate banking study said they used at least one public sector bank as a lead corporate bank. By 2018, that share had fallen to just 15%. The bulk of those relationships went to private sector banks, unquote. According to the study, private sector lender HDFC Bank and PSU lender State Bank of India topped the list of local banks which are used by three quarters of large Indian companies for corporate banking services. Private lender ICICI Bank is the third most preferred bank for Indian corporates. About a few weeks ago, I had spoken about how a piece of land in BKC was sold for a record price of about 600 odd something crore rupees per acre. And now, according to a new report, New Delhi's Connaught Place is the ninth most expensive office location in the world, with an annual rent of nearly $144 per square foot, according to property consultant CBRE. CP, located in the heart of New Delhi, was at the ninth position even last year. In its annual Global Prime Office Occupancy Costs Survey, CBRE tracks the cost of leasing prime office space globally. For the second year, Hong Kong's Central District retained the top spot as the world's most expensive market for prime office rents, with the costs valued at $322 per square foot. Mumbai's BKC, that is Bandra Kurla Complex, and Nariman Point CBD slipped to 27th and 40th positions, respectively. Which are the others that round out the top five? London's West End is second, Hong Kong Kowloon is third, New York, especially Midtown Manhattan, fourth, and Beijing's Finance Street, the fifth. More than 4 lakh additional berths will be available to passengers every day from October, when the railways will move to a technology which will help it generate power from engines rather than power cars for lighting and air conditioning, senior officials told today. Currently, there are one or two power cars at the end of every train in every LHB rake, where the electricity to be supplied to coaches is produced in a diesel generator. A new technology called head-on generation, which is used worldwide, is now tapped from overhead power lines and distributed to train coaches. In related railway news, apparently it's going to fill up 3 lakh vacancies. So if you've always wanted to work for the railways, here's your chance. Deposits in bank accounts opened under Jan Dhan scheme, launched about 5 years ago by the Modi government, have apparently crossed the 1 lakh crore rupee mark. As per the latest finance ministry data, the total balance in over 36.06 crore Pradhan Mantri Jan Dhan Yojana, that is PMJDY accounts, was at about 1,495.94 crore rupees as of the 3rd of July. Well, in some happy news for cows, Madhya Pradesh budget has announced a cow welfare fund while also raising Hajj committee grant, lest you complain that they were being partisan. The budget, which was presented by Finance Minister Tarun Bhanoth, also proposes a threefold hike in the honorarium for priests working in registered temples. Bhanoth, the finance minister there, said the ruling Congress had written off loans worth 7,000 crore rupees of 20 lakh farmers within 128 days of coming to power. This was, of course, one of the flagship schemes that the Congress had run on in the run-up to the elections in Madhya Pradesh. We live in the world of influencers, and guess who is the topmost health influencer of the country? Well, no surprises. Prime Minister Modi has emerged as the topmost health influencer in the country for the second time in a row. And surprisingly enough, Baba Ramdev, whose gyrations of the stomach is what we were introduced to, at least for a large section of society, about yoga, is at number three. Sandwiched between Modi and Baba Ramdev is, of course, Akshay Kumar. Well, if the three of them sat down, what an enlightening discussion it would be on the way to eat mangoes. Who else is there in the top 10 list? Virat Kohli is there, Deepika Padukone is there, MS Dhoni, Ranveer Singh, Kareena Kapoor, Tiger Shroff, and Priyanka Chopra. In a list that is largely Bollywood, the winner is, of course, PM Modi. Well, the government does not seem to be winning when it comes to IAS officers. There is apparently a shortage of nearly 1,500 IAS officers in the country, the Lok Sabha was told today. Officers in position as on the 1st of January 2019 was 5,205 against the total authorized strength of 6,699, Minister of State for Personnel Jitendra Singh said in a written reply. On to other pieces of news from the rest of the country. It is, of course, the Karnataka story all over again. Two more Congress legislators have submitted their resignation to the Karnataka Speaker today, worsening the crisis for the state's ruling coalition, even as DK Shivkumar, or DK Shi, as he's popularly known, the troubleshooter of the Congress party, tried desperately but failed to meet these rebel lawmakers who are now camped at a hotel in Mumbai. They were at the Sofitel, but then Congress workers started protesting outside of the hotel, so they've now been moved to an unknown location. He is, of course, being sent back to Bangalore by the Mumbai police, DK Shivkumar, that is. Since last week, the year-old coalition between the Congress and JDS in Karnataka has been fighting for survival. With the resignation of MTB Nagaraj and K. Sudhakar, the number of rebels has gone up to 18. Mr. Nagaraj told reporters that he was fed up with politics and wished to retire from public life altogether. He was, Mr. Nagaraj also was quoted as saying, "I don't want any ministerial position or anything. I am fed up with politics." We'll see what different tune is sung should there be another situation where the BJP comes to power and he joins the BJP. If he is not a minister there, well, we'll talk then. 13 rebels have been in Mumbai since they submitted their resignations. But yesterday I told you that 8 of those resignation letters were not okayed by Ramesh Kumar, who is the Karnataka Assembly Speaker. He has wanted to meet them in person, but that has not happened with all of them. So if the rebels don't waver, the Congress JDS coalition's 118 members in the 224-seat assembly will come down to 100, and the majority mark will drop from 113 to 104. And the BJP has 105 members and the support of two independents, which will take their tally to 107. I've done the math for you. You do the inference, because I'm not going to give you editorializing on this one. And of course, I should also tell you that the word from the BJP is that there is no horse trading whatsoever. But what is happening right now is a crisis that is only threatening to get worse day by day for the coalition government in Karnataka. Rahul Gandhi has returned to his home base in Amethi in Uttar Pradesh for the first time since his shock defeat to Smriti Irani from a constituency that had elected him since 2004. The Congress leader said, and I quote, "My relationship with Amethi is personal. I will never leave Amethi. Don't think that I don't belong to you. I will keep visiting, have to devote time to Wayanad as well, but I would devote time to you as well. I was an Amethi MP for 15 years. I have old ties with Amethi, bonds of love. I am there whenever you need me," unquote. The defeat, of course, in Amethi, which is a largely rural constituency, it has always been loyal to the Nehru-Gandhi family, came as a huge shock and was symbolic of Congress's routing in the 2019 elections. Well, the first images of India's heaviest rocket, which is referred to as Bahubali, have been released by ISRO just days before it ferries India's Chandrayaan 2 into space. Chandrayaan 2 is, of course, India's most ambitious space mission yet, and one of its aims is to place a robotic rover on the moon, and it'll be launched on the 15th of July at 2:51 a.m. and President Ramnath Kovind himself will be at Sriharikota to witness this launch. In these pictures that have been released by ISRO, the geosynchronous satellite launch vehicle Mark 3, that is GSLV MK3, or Bahubali as it is being called, can be seen standing on the launch pad. The 640-ton rocket is as high as a 15-story building, and it will loft the 3.8-ton satellite on its journey to the moon. This will be the fourth launch of India's heaviest launcher. You might have seen this go a bit viral when there was a song release of Judgmental Hai Kya. Kangana Ranaut picked up a fight with a journalist from PTI called Justin Rao and accused him of writing smearing stories about her and having some sort of personal vendetta against her. And that altercation, which lasts about 8 minutes, went viral. And now the Entertainment Journalists Guild of India has told that they will not be covering Kangana Ranaut anymore. They said she would receive no media coverage until she apologizes. This film is, of course, being produced by Ekta Kapoor, and she has released an apology saying that was out of hand and we apologize, but Kangana Ranaut has not. In response, Kangana Ranaut's sister, Rangoli Chandel, who is also her manager, speak of nepotism. Isn't she all against nepotism? But her manager is her sister. Make what you will of that. Rangoli, who's recently been picking all sorts of fights with all sorts of people, Tapsee Pannu, who basically reacted to that trailer and did not praise Kangana specifically, was also the recipient of the sister's ire when she said sasti copy to her, etc. And now she's gone ahead and said, ek baat ka main vaada karti hu, Kangana se apology to nahi milegi. In bikau, nange, deshdrohi, deshge talal, liptar media walo ko, magar wo tumko dho dho kar seedha zarur karegi. So, bhai, we have come to a place where Rangoli, some sister of an actress, is going to tell journalists that we are anti-national. Bhai, wah. Judgmental hai kya? Turning very quickly now to stories from elsewhere. As usual, we start with US stock futures, which are pointing to a lower open today, as investors are waiting for comments from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell on Capitol Hill today as well as tomorrow. Powell is testifying before a House panel today at about 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and a Senate panel tomorrow. This is, of course, against the backdrop of slowing economic activity and market expectations for a central bank interest rate cut later this month. But as we know, promising jobs data from the month of June may not result in another rate cut later this month. But all of this will have more clarity when we hear from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. But according to one report on CNBC, the prevailing view is that there is a 100% chance of a quarter point rate cut when the Fed meets on the 30th and 31st of July. In a quick trade war update, top US trade officials spoke with their Chinese counterparts for the first time since them meeting at the G20 summit in Japan. And what are they doing? They're continuing negotiations aimed at resolving the outstanding trade disputes between the world's two largest economies. Both sides will continue these talks as appropriate, said one official, as quoted by CNBC. Will this trade war or trade talk or whatever you want to call it come to an end? I don't know, but I've certainly been talking about it for more than a year. Some news from the streaming service arena. AT&T is pulling Friends from Netflix to beef up its own upcoming streaming service. With new services launching, popular shows are splintering on to several different platforms. The wireless company, that is AT&T, which owns Warner Media Entertainment Business, also said today that its service will be called HBO Max. It will launch in the spring of 2020 and a beta version will be out later this year. As the name itself suggests, it has HBO content and other video from Warner Brothers Studio, just like Friends, and new series and movies which are created exclusively to the service. More companies like Comcast, Apple and Disney are also unveiling their own streaming services, and they're trying to make them more appealing with exclusive shows and deep libraries. There is one report which has outward said it's not about producing quality television anymore, it's just about getting as much content out there as is possible. AT&T's decision has just come on the back of Comcast's NBC Universal saying only last month that it would keep The Office, which is of course Netflix's most popular show, for itself starting in 2021. Friends, of course, is the second most streamed show on Netflix, and that apparently is going to HBO Max. News from another streaming company, Amazon, but this time we're talking about the parent company. This also ties in nicely with a lot of pop stars these days doing cosmetics. Kylie Jenner, as we know, is the world's youngest self-made billionaire. Whether or not you choose to believe that title is up to you, but that's what Forbes called her. We also know that Rihanna has a cosmetics line of her own, and that was recently in association with LVMH, has launched a beauty brand. There is also, of course, Ulta Beauty and several others. And now joining the fray here is Lady Gaga. Pop star Lady Gaga today announced a line of beauty products exclusively for sale on Amazon in a boost to the online retailer's cosmetics business. This brand is called House Laboratories, that is H-A-U-S, just like you've heard House of Gaga, etc. It's called House of Laboratories and will be launched in September for shoppers in almost a dozen countries, including the US, Germany, Japan, etc. Lady Gaga, who recently won an Academy Award for the song Shallow from A Star Is Born, said Amazon was the right partner because it embraced her message of self-acceptance. It only remains to be seen if there'll be meat-colored lipsticks and other such bubbles and platform shoes and other things that she became initially famous for. But now, of course, she's turned a page and is now all about the acting. But September is when you can buy Lady Gaga cosmetics. All right, turning very quickly to political news coming out of the United States first and then the rest of the world. The UK ambassador to the United States, that is Kim Darroch, has resigned following the leak of secret cables in which he described President Trump's administration as uniquely dysfunctional and inept. Trump had criticized Darroch, saying the ambassador was not well thought of in America. He called him stupid in his usual style on Twitter. And then now the news has emerged that Kim Darroch has resigned. Another story that we've been following quite closely here is the story of Jeffrey Epstein. We've spoken about him earlier. I've told you that he used to be a financial advisor, became a superstar, managing assets worth $1 billion or so, and he apparently still owns the largest residential house in Manhattan. But he's also a known sex offender and years ago was actually being investigated for getting massages from underage girls and even on cases of molestation, etc. Now, there is a twist in the tale, and here is where Trump comes in, because what story is there in our modern times where Trump is not involved? Trump, obviously, apparently a close friend of Jeffrey Epstein in the 90s and early 2000s. They were known to party together. And he, of course, even gave a quote to New York Magazine in about 2002 when he had gone on to say, and I quote here, these are his words. I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do. And many of them are on the younger side. Now, this was a story from 2002, and apparently there was a falling out between Trump and Epstein, and they were not on talking terms. But as it turns out, about 10 years ago, when he was being indicted at a court in Miami, one Mr. Acosta gave him a sweetheart deal and let him go. And now this particular Acosta is now serving on the cabinet of, guess who? Well, Trump. It all comes back there. That's the origin story. But this Jeffrey Epstein case is something that will likely open a can of worms because of his association with many people in the Manhattan Cognoscenti list, including, of course, his association with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton has released a statement saying he knew nothing of Epstein's crimes. Another matter that has been plaguing the Trump administration is, of course, the poor treatment of migrant children at the hands of U.S. border agents in recent months. And NBC has now reported that this extends beyond Texas to include allegations of sexual assault and retaliation for protests, according to dozens of accounts by children held in Arizona, collected by government case managers and obtained and verified by NBC News. Apparently, a 16-year-old Guatemalan boy held in Yuma, Arizona, said he and others in his cell complained about the taste of the water and food that they were given. The Customs and Border Protection agents took the mats out of their cell in retaliation, forcing them to sleep on hard concrete. A 15-year-old girl from Honduras described a large bearded officer putting his hands inside her bra, pulling down her underwear and groping her as part of what was meant to be a routine pat-down. And these stories continue on and on. But we haven't yet heard from the White House, and Donald Trump continues to reject that children at the border are being mistreated. Another story that we've been following closely is Iran saying they're enriching more uranium than was agreed based on the treaty, that is the Iran nuclear deal. The UN's nuclear watchdog has said it will hold a special meeting just next week on Iran's nuclear program at the request of the United States after Tehran said it had breached some terms of the deal. As I had only told you a few days ago, Iran has now said we will enrich as much as we see fit. This was, of course, as a fallout of the altercation between the US and Iran, where a drone of the United States was gunned down by Iran and a war was about to happen until, of course, Donald Trump decided, nope, and you know about the story. Now, a spokesman for the IAEA, which is, of course, the International Atomic Energy Agency, has said the meeting of its board of governors will be held on the 10th of July, that is today, in Vienna. The meeting will come at a time of high tensions between these two countries and, of course, because of the hawkish Mike Pompeo and John Bolton on the United States side. U.S. President Donald Trump in May 2018 had, of course, pulled out of the landmark 2015 nuclear agreement that Iran had signed with six world powers and began reimposing sanctions that had been eased in return for curbs on Iran's nuclear weapons program. This deal was, of course, one of the signature moments in Obama's career, that is at least in Obama 2.0 in the second term, and Trump was very much instrumental in withdrawing the U.S. from this. So to discuss the state of uranium and how much of it is being enriched and what kind of sanctions or what kind of measures need to be taken against Iran, there's going to be a meeting with the UN's nuclear watchdog. Perhaps you've heard, Britain needs a prime minister. Theresa May is still, of course, sitting, but she's stepped down from the leadership of the Conservative Party. And just the electorate, a select electorate of signed up members of the Conservative Party are now in charge of finding the next leader of the Conservative Party. And by definition, therefore, the next British prime minister. I have described to you in detail the process of how this has happened over the course of the past few weeks. And now there are only two left in British Idol, if you will, Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson. The two of them have clashed on Brexit and UK relations and yesterday were on a televised debate. Jeremy Hunt accused Boris Johnson of not being willing to put his neck on the line by saying he would quit as Prime Minister if he did not hit the 31st October deadline for Brexit. Johnson, on the other hand, Boris Johnson, of course, Lord of the Bad Haircuts and Donald Trump of the United Kingdom, said he admired Jeremy Hunt's ability to change his mind so often, a dig at the fact that Mr. Hunt had voted, in fact, to remain. Johnson also declined to condemn Donald Trump for his response to the emails row, which has, of course, resulted in the ambassador to the United States, Kim Darroch, resigning. The US president has lambasted Sir Kim and criticized Theresa May, called her foolish, as I told you yesterday. So it was a rather prickly interaction between Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson. And as we already know, Boris Johnson has a significant lead within this electorate. And how this debate has changed the minds of this electorate, we will know soon enough. In a quick roundup of tech, Microsoft Teams could be to Slack what Facebook was to Snapchat, according to one report. What does that mean? It basically means it is a copier and a killer. The workplace messaging software that is Slack is losing ground to its biggest rival, Microsoft Teams, which, by the way, is alleged has copied its way to popularity. Recode has reported that the newly public Slack, it just went public only recently as I've reported, is tearing down a market share that is rather mostly flat. Its adoption rates are also declining and a number of big tech companies say they plan to abandon the service altogether. At the same time, Microsoft Teams, which basically emulates a lot of Slack's functions, is seeing increased market share, relatively higher adoption rates, and low rates of defection, according to data. The big picture here, as Rani Molla of Recode goes on to say, Slack's competition with Microsoft points to a larger issue of innovation and a concentration of power in tech. So you can't have a copyright on what a software does, but you can write another code which does the same thing, and you would in fact end up beating competition, which is precisely what Facebook did with Snapchat, and that is what is alleged Microsoft Teams is doing to Slack. In rather concerning news, I'm certain you've all used Zoom, which is the video conferencing app. You can use it either on your phone or on your computer. Now, earlier this week, a security researcher called Jonathan Leitcher has exposed a flaw in Zoom, which would allow someone to turn on your Mac's webcam and force you to join a Zoom call without your permission. In that post, Leitcher has said he discovered the vulnerability in March and urged the company to fix it. But as of this week, the company has not resolved the security flaw. And why is this big? Because, well, it could expose up to 750,000 companies and millions of people who use Zoom to hackers. I know this is a tech roundup and Donald Trump shouldn't be making an appearance, but here he does because that's just how the world is. Trump, apparently, is violating the First Amendment by blocking people on Twitter. Or at least, that's what the US Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit has decided today. According to this ruling, Donald Trump cannot block Twitter users from following his personal account because it is, quote, a public forum and blocking users is unconstitutional. The court went on to say, and I quote, once the president has chosen a platform and opened up its interactive space to millions of users and participants, he may not selectively exclude those views he disagrees with. The ruling also affirms a lower court's ruling in May of last year, which also said that Trump had been violating the Constitution by blocking his critics. If he was a private citizen, go ahead, block anyone willy-nilly. But now you're the president and you've chosen this as your platform to get your message out there, and it is unconstitutional, therefore, to block anyone on Twitter. To conclude our tech roundup, it is the second biggest IT deal ever. IBM has closed Red Hat acquisition for a whopping $34 billion, one of the largest tech acquisitions of all time. IBM originally announced its intent to acquire the Linux developer in October of last year. The US Department of Justice gave its stamp of approval in May earlier this year, and the last big potential roadblock was removed when the EU gave its unconditional approval at the end of June. IBM says that Red Hat will stay under the watch of CEO Jim Whitehurst, with Whitehurst joining IBM's senior management and reporting directly to IBM CEO Ginni Rometty. IBM has also said that they will keep Red Hat independent. And finally, in an update on world leaders' health, it's not something I like to do because I do believe it is a cheap shot and more often than not rather ageist. But considering this has been widely reported, I think I must include it as part of my responsibilities. Angela Merkel was seen shaking yet again, and this is not the first time. These involuntary tremors have been observed on her twice before. And Merkel's work ethic and stamina during late night negotiations has, of course, become the stuff of legend since she became Chancellor in 2005. She once said she prided herself on having a camel-like capacity to store up sleep. The first time this happened, it was said it was dehydration. The second time, not much explanation was given. And the third time, this has happened and it has raised a few questions. Here's hoping, if there is something wrong, that Chancellor Merkel is on the path to a speedy recovery. Well, I hope all of you are not entirely too disappointed. There will be another World Cup. There will be the 2020 World Cup and there'll be several other things. But I understand this World Cup means a lot to a lot of people. And I'm very sorry about the outcome of today. But I can't also let you go without telling you what happened on Dalal Street. BSE Sensex fell 173 points to close at 38,557. While Nifty 50 closed 57 points down at 11,498. The index closed below its 100 days exponential moving average, placed around 11,500 levels, losing it by just about 2 points. Well, those are all the big stories that I thought worth telling you. And I'll, of course, be back first thing in the morning with a morning walk down the Lal Street, as well as from some stocks for you to choose from on Stock Picks of the Day. In the meanwhile, do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.